Some historians have suggested that World War II resulted from the severe economic penalties imposed on Germany in the Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I. Did Werner's struggle with childhood poverty help you understand how the German people might have been seduced by Hitler's promise of a return to wealth and prestige? So I think that... I definitely think that the people were seduced by Hitler's promise of wealth and prestige because of the Treaty of Versailles and how, like, how much it affected them as a country. Trying to get my words together. What do you think?
I never really thought of the Treaty of Versailles while reading, because it's never explicitly mentioned, but we still see the effects of post-war what happened in post-war Germany with all this economic downturn, and how everyone in Werner's hometown just looked absolutely miserable from his descriptions. So when the new government comes along and they say, oh, we can fix everything, and they do in fact do that from what Werner observes, it seems understandable that they would certainly see the promises as attractive.
Yeah, and I think also because they were coming out of the Depression, so they were definitely in a lot of poverty, and just like, even if they were promised like, oh, I'll get you out of this, I think that's a big reason why they would have, you know, chosen Hitler, because he was like, oh, I'm gonna get you out of this, we're gonna get more money, it's, everything's gonna be better for you after this. So it's kind of like, I kind of understand why they would have chosen him to lead them.
And there's that second part of the question.
So can you think of any marginalized groups in your own society who might be vulnerable to the promises of a radical leader, and is there a way you could intervene? I think definitely the indigenous could be, because of the way that they're treated by the Canadian government and a lot of people around as well. Because, you know, a lot of Indigenous people in Canada don't have, like, fresh water or anything.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that they could be, there could be a radical leader that could make promises to them that they would want to follow, just like Hitler did to the German people when they were in the Depression.
Yeah. I personally can't think of any other groups, but in terms of intervention, well, the best solution would be to, like in the case of Indigenous people, actually get them all these services that they desperately need that everyone else has.
Yeah. I think like the government has always promised reconciliation, but they haven't actually really done much to reconcile. So it needs to be done to help them, like give them basically the basic human rights that all Canadians have, because they deserve that.
Yeah. I remember hearing in particular, there's a lot of places in the territories that don't have fresh water, and a lot of reserves do not have any good medical care.
Yeah, so those are definitely some things that need to be fixed. Okay, so despite her physical limitations, Marie-Laure often seems to have a clearer view of the world than Werner does. What do you think allows Marie-Laure to see so clearly? And then what causes Werner's blindness? Do you want to go first?
I also need a moment to think.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons is also just where they grew up, right? Because Marie-Laure grew up in France with her father.
Yeah.
And she was more, since she can't use her sight, she like hears and feels everything around her to kind of make her decisions. So she didn't know really what was going on in Germany. She only knew what was happening to them, and she knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons. And Werner was also he was in a place where he wasn't in the best place, and they didn't have a lot of money, and he was going to be told he was going to become a miner.
Yeah.
So it was kind of indoctrinated.
He was left to learn things on his own.
Yeah.
Because Werner did not have his... Werner's parents are, I'm not sure if his mother's ever mentioned, but his father died in the mines.
Yes.
And so he didn't have any parental guidance. Mm-hmm. Well, and While he did have Flora Elena, the caretaker, she isn't really a substitute for a parent, and he was so curious that there isn't really any way that she could have substituted for a parent, I believe. And meanwhile, Marie-Laure, she has her very knowledgeable dad, who got her all the books, and on her birthday, he made the puzzles for herself.
Yeah, Marie-Laure is kind of on the side where people are saying that this is wrong and that this shouldn't be happening, whereas Werner's on the side where they're saying, oh no, this is right. Like, we should be able to do this.
Actually, yeah, now that I think of that as well, definitely. People are being much more transparent with Marie-Laure, and Werner's growing up in an environment of, I guess, secrets and not necessarily mistrust, but of course, people aren't just being entirely honest with each other.
So do we want to move to the next one? So the narration moves back and forth both in time and between different characters. How does this affect your reading experience? How do you think this experience would have been different if the story had been told entirely in chronological order? I think because it moves back and forth in time, it almost makes the story more complete. I feel like if it moved in chronological order, it would be like a completely different story almost. And with the way it's moving between characters as well, you kind of see what's happening in Germany and in Saint-Malo and in France and the both sides of the war, basically, like Werner's indoctrination from the government of Germany, and then also Marie-Laure and how it's affecting her, this war on, like, with her and France, like Paris moving to Saint-Malo and so on. And also, I feel like because it's not in chronological order, they can kind of hint at things, but Anthony Doerr, he doesn't exactly tell you what's going on, but you guess because he, like, gives little hints to what's happening. And I feel like because it's that way, it makes the story, as I said before, like, it completes the story.
You start to anticipate things. Like, for example, there's Volkheimer and Bernard, I think his name was.
I think it's
Bern,
something
Bern,
like that.
Bern. They're both introduced in the first section of the story with Werner, and we don't see them until about. No, we don't see Volkheimer until around halfway through the book, and then we don't see Bern for another while. So we're given a lot of things to when they finally come around as the story moves forward in the past, we go, oh, so that's that one person I saw in the beginning. And then there's also the fact that Etienne, he's mentioned in the beginning, but he's not mentioned by name. But we know that Marie-Laure is staying with her great uncle.
Yeah, so I think it kind of makes you, it like shows you the characters before, so when their names show up, they seem familiar to you. And then, when you actually meet them, you're like, oh, this is what they're actually like. And it kind of forms the story more. It's like you get a little bit of the story, like from the ending and like all the characters that are going to be in it, and then it just forms as you go along.
Actually, one thing I remember, but in particular, is seeing Volkheimer being introduced and thinking he's like this big, generic, burly Nazi. And now we see him later. He's more just like he's a gentle giant who's like, I don't think it's never explicitly stated that he particularly agrees with Nazi ideology more than he's just a soldier doing what he does.
It gives you more, like, you see the characters and you make your own ideas of them, but then it gives you more on the characters, and you're kind of like Etienne as well. It kind of seems just like an old man who wasn't really, like when, especially when they first talked about him, they said he wasn't all there. So it kind of, and then you meet the characters and you get the perceptions, different perceptions of them than you originally had, and it kind of builds the story, and it also makes you a little bit closer to the characters, I think. Okay, how does Daware's narrative structure highlight the similarities and differences between Marie Laure and Werner in All the Light You Cannot See? Well, with Marie Laure, he definitely shows because she can't see, so he tells us how it sounds and how it feels before she, like, and we kind of figure out things where she is with her.
Yeah.
Like, she'll smell salt, and, oh, it's the sea. And, like, with Werner, it's more, like, telling, oh, like, this is where he is, and this is what's around him. Whereas Marie Laure, she kind of has to find what's around her, or she knows because of her models that her father had for her.
Yeah.
So he'll like describe going down streets like three storm drains and then turn and then four storm drains versus so on and so forth.
I lost track of what I was going to say. I vaguely recall a specific section where Marie Laure and Werner are contrasted a bit more. Their contrast is a bit more explicitly. I recall a section like that, but I can't quite. But either way, though, the way that it switches between the two fairly frequently does do a lot to highlight differences on its own. Actually, I do remember now what I was thinking of. There's that section where Marie Laure is trying to get out of Paris, and at the same time, Werner finds his sister, Jutta. She's listening to radio broadcasts from France about how they're being bombed by the Germans.
And I think also, like, it's very clear whose perspective you're reading it from when you switch chapters, just by the way that things around them are described.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they were both in St. Malo, you could tell when it was Werner and when it was Marie Laure, because they had very different, like, he had almost different writing styles for them, because Marie Laure is blind and Werner was not, and he was trying to show that difference between them.
Yeah.
Okay. When Werner and Yuta first heard the Frenchman on the radio, he concluded his broadcast by saying, "Open your eyes and see what you can with them before they close forever." And Werner recalls these words throughout the book. How do you think this phrase relates to the overall message of the story? And how does it relate to Madame Manek's question, "Don't you want to be alive before you die?" Okay, so I think a lot of the... Anthony Daware basically wrote the story because of all the different like waves of light from the radios and how you can't see them. So I think it's not necessarily saying just like see what's around you, kind of see more than what's around you. Like basically, I think it relates to Madame Manek's question because they mean very similar things. Like do what you want and see more than what you're told almost. Like, see past the battery you've been put in.
Yeah. I've lost track of what I was thinking, yeah. So, once again, I recall how, in an interview, Dewar, he talks about how he learned that humans have only been on Earth for a very short time in terms of evolutionary time. So, and this may have been how short people's lives were. We see, like this actually ties a bit into how Werner ends up dying pretty young. Near the end of the story, he steps on a landmine by accident, placed by his own arm.
And he said something just before that to Marie Laure, like today he was actually living or something around that. So it's kind of like he opened his eyes to the world around him, but and he kind of took the advice, but then he died after, so
and,
he closed forever.
And what I think this is supposed to, I guess, symbolize is that you don't know when your eyes are going to close, in this sense. You might as well live expecting that they will close tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's also with what Madame Marin said with "Don't you want to be alive before you die?" And she also kind of said that shortly before she died.
Yeah.
And she was saying like to go against the Germans, even if it was in small ways. Just like Werner also kind of went against what he was indoctrinated with to help Marie Laure escape.
Yes. And I think I forgot what I was saying. Yeah. It's a bit like a I can't remember. Do you want to come back to that?
Yeah. So that's just the last question. On page 390, the author writes, "To shut your eyes is to guess nothing of blindness." What did you learn or realize about blindness from Marie Laure's perspective? Do you think her being blind gave her any advantages?
Well, I want to bring up. Another thing I saw from an interview. How Dewar says he was thinking of what is so enticing or beautiful that a blind person would be immune to. And that's how he came up with the diamond, the Sea of Flames diamond. So,
so almost it gave her the advantage of like not being tricked by beauty.
Yeah, because she's blind, she can't be deceived by appearances.
Yeah.
She can't be deceived by how things seem to be on the outside. I think that actually extends to not only what can be literally seen, but also I think it also extends to other things you see in the book, I've lost my train of thought again.
I think it also connects to the other question we had with Marie Laure seeing the world more clearly.
Yeah.
And Werner being more blind. I think another big thing in that is that she's not deceived by appearances.
Yeah.
She basically takes what she hears and what she feels around her. And I think that's an advantage for her because she's basically, she's can't be deceived by beautiful things that might be ugly on the inside,
yeah,
or might cause problems to her in the future.
That's pretty much what I was trying to say. So, in terms of how, so I personally think, I don't really think of blindness very much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Marie Laure demonstrates that it's not exactly an impediment that in the way that we may think, because we talk about how we see how she's memorizing her way through the streets of Paris or Saint-Malo using the models by her closet. Actually, a funny thing about the models, I remember about how von Ruppel, the Nazi gemologist, when he sees one of the models, he specifically points out that it is a painting, which I thought was a neat detail.
Yeah. I think also one thing is that people kind of underestimate her because she's blind. So like it's a good thing like she was helping with the resistance.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't really expect a blind girl to be helping with the resistance. And also with von Rumpel, he wasn't really expecting her to like he was kind of thinking it was still in the house somewhere and not necessarily with her.
He was He underestimated her.
Yeah.
He. I don't think. No, he took her at her word when she said that she didn't know anything about the diamond. I don't think she actually did know anything about the diamond, but he didn't think that. He didn't think that maybe he wasn't suspicious of her at all,
yeah,
because she was blind.
And young, wasn't she quite young?
She was maybe 16, I think.
Oh, okay.
At that time, yeah. Because she was 2 years younger than Werner. So I think that's right.
So Werner was the one he went to. Was he like in that youth?
Yeah, basically he went to the school. He wasn't in the Hitler. Well, I think they all were forced to go into the Hitler.
Actually, yeah.
But he wasn't really like he didn't really choose to go in there. But he went to the school to learn more about the radios and became part of the army through that.
Okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't really invested in the ideology. He just wanted to learn.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as it was in Nazi Germany, you would have to do this through party. If you remember how a lot of scientific research, you either didn't do it or you did it for military purposes for Nazi Party. And that's how I remember Wernher von Braun ended up making V2 rockets.
Oh.
Because he wanted to continue his rocket research, but the only way to do that in Germany would be to do it for military purposes.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I would get distracted. I would just want to, it's actually kind of mesmerizing watching that as you talk.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to talk about?
There was something I wanted to say about question five that I lost track of, but I don't think it's coming back to me.
Okay, so are there any final thoughts that you would have from the book? Like, do you feel that you understand? I don't think the plot is so confusing that, like, anxious people, you gotta figure some things out. I don't think it's quite like that. This book, is it?
The plot's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you like about this book or not like?
I definitely liked how it went, like, switch through time. I think that was really interesting, because most books don't do that because people think it would be confusing, but it wasn't really confusing. It kind of helped the story a lot more.
So almost like from a future writer's perspective, Rachel, what did you like about the book, or what did you take from the writing of this book?
I think when writing Marie Lore, he kind of foreshadowed what was around her by the way she smelled and touched and then figured out. So like he would talk about how it smelled, how it felt, and then he would say, "Oh, it must be this."
Okay.
Kind of because Marie Lore can't see, so unless she already knows what's there, she has to figure it out on her own. Whereas Werner was a lot more like, "Oh, here he is. Here's what around him," and then maybe he'll talk about smell or feeling after he explains what is around him already.
It's almost, I wonder, as an author, it's almost a bit of a cop-out to make this character blind. It's not a cop-out, but it makes them blind, and therefore you're being forced, and some people are like, whoa, look at the imagery that they included on this, like, but it's not, because her being blind is important to the theme,
yes,
isn't it?
I do like how the story, it emphasizes that there are other people around. It emphasizes the rest of the world,
mm-hmm,
in essence. Because there's actually one specific moment late into the book where it starts going into detail about other events unrelated to what's going on right now that are happening at the same time. And it relates, it's all about how, again, there's other people and there's a lot of stuff, things happening that don't have anything to do with the conflict, the main conflict.
Okay. The main conflict of the war or just the stories?
The story and Maybe even a horror, now that I think of it.
Okay, so that's interesting. So, I mean, if this whole book is about, hello, if this whole book then is about World War II, it's interesting if the whole war is about this massive conflict, but then there's all these other, like, the other conflicts don't go away. Just because the world's at war doesn't mean there's other conflicts don't go away.
Yeah.
So, even like right now, we're saying about the Ukraine, there's a war there, but there's also their own mini conflicts that's going on as well.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking how this all feeds into, I pointed out in the last week when we're talking about themes, this also gives a bit more weight to the idea of connections between people and how, all of these people are connected in some way, like through this, like going back to that moment in the story I mentioned where it talks about all of these different events happening at the same time.
Okay.
Like most of these are in fact related to the war in some way.
Okay.
And like people are connected through the war in that moment. In that moment, they're all connected through the war now. And I'm also thinking of this moment at the ending of the book, the epilogue, said in the present day, Marie Law thinks about the wonders of how there's all this radio technology floating around, all the radio waves floating around, people talking to each other. And I also actually think, because of this, it links to how, I do also think the story touches a bit upon how a lot of people are connected, but not necessarily, they're connected, but not really connected.
So it's like a superficial connection?
A bit like that. Like.
So, tell me if I'm wrong then. Is he trying to say, so the title is All the Light We Cannot See, and again, it's the context of the right, so I can't remember. I know the light is referring to the radio waves.
It is, yeah.
Okay. So, and are those radio waves in the book bringing light and hope, or no?
Well, in Marie Lore's case, they are, because her uncle and her are like taking messages from the resistance and sending it out through their radio.
Okay.
But in Werner's case, they're using those radio waves to catch people. In like, for example, the first place they go is Russia. So they catch people in Russia through the radio waves and kill them and take them as prisoner.
So why light? Like if you were to title this book, would you call it All the Light We Cannot See?
Well, radio waves are technically a form of light. They're the same type of energy as light because they're both electromagnetic waves. I gotta reiterate what I was trying to say here. Basically, the radio has a wide reach. Radio has a wide reach.
Yes.
And because of this, it connects people, like not, it's superficially, but not in a bad way. Not necessarily a bad way. Like, but it just has the reach to connect to people that you wouldn't otherwise, even if it's just surface level.
Gotcha.
In Werner's parts of the story, a point is made that sometimes he's picking up signals from all across the continent. Like back at the orphanage where he lived as a child, he could hear all the way out to France, Saint-Malo in France, from Etienne's broadcast before the war. He could hear England and even Eastern Europe.
Just through the radio.
Just through the radio.
So it is like it's a simple, superficial connection, but a connection regardless.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious about light, and again, I didn't realize it's the light with the radio particles, but I just think of all the symbolism that comes with light.
Yeah, and then I think also, like with Werner and his sister in the beginning, the radio's kind of bringing them kind of like light to their life. It's giving them joy because they have something to do.
Yeah.
So in most cases of the book, it's bringing hope, but in the one case, it's also bringing darkness to the people who are on the other side of the radio.
True, so there is the irony of something being turned on the light. Okay, but since you're almost done with the questions, too, like you already have three theme statements, but I'm wondering if Khalil can come. Is there any parts, sorry, if you're done, you can stop it. Are they talking then?
Yeah.
I don't need to hear myself talking.
I just stopped this.